The following program was pre-recorded on WFAN. It's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes. A frank, honest, open conversation about gambling addiction and, of course, addicts like myself. Happy to have Jason from New York joining us this morning. Jay, it's Craig. Good morning and thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
When was the last time you made a wager?
December 31st, 2022.
Oh, congratulations. You got a couple years under your belt. I imagine life is far better for you today than it was a couple years ago.
100,000%.
All right, let's get into it just a little bit here. How old were you when you were first exposed to the world of gambling?
I would say five.
Walk me through that.
With my father, he used to take me into some places he used to frequent, and they used to play cards and blackjack and poker and so on and so forth. Also, the carnivals I would go to, they would have gambling tents, and not to mention the carnival games as well that I instantly found a passion for.
Right, so your family was involved in carnivals?
No. I would go to carnivals.
Oh, I got you.
With my family and
got it.
They would go to the gambling tents and then during holidays and everything, everybody would gamble after like a big dinner or whatnot and
put money. Same thing. Like there'd be that game when your uncle's over, grandfather's over, and the men would go into a room and start playing cards and maybe having a couple extra pops after dinner. I get it. So you were kind of like me. Indoctrinated into it at a pretty early age, yeah?
Yes.
And was there a moment when you look back now on your life where you became more interested in gambling than your buddies did and you were more focused on it or interested in it?
Yes. I'd say in my 20s, I would go out to Las Vegas every Super Bowl weekend with a group of business owners in the same plaza I owned a business in. Mm-hmm. And I had a huge win at one of the hotels, and that was it. I literally was off and running from that point. It was a big win, went home with the money, and it was just insane ever since.
What was your
in my life?
What was your game of choice at the time?
At the time, it was three-card poker, four-card poker.
Oh, I'm shuddering at that because it's kind of like the worst odds of any game in a casino. So to fall prey to that, I can only imagine some of the losses you suffered, playing three-card and four-card poker. When you really got into it, walk us through, if you don't mind, what an average week might be like when you're knee-deep into the addiction and your gambling kind of got out of control. What was a normal day like for you?
A normal day would be, depending on which business I owned at the time, mm-hmm. I embezzled either from myself or from my business via partner and whatnot, and would literally wake up thinking, I'm going to take the day off, not let anybody know, and get to the casino and do my thing. And basically, that was a normal day for me. It would probably happen 3 to 4 days a week. The casinos are within an hour and a half range from where I live. And
I'm sure the thinking was, I'm going to borrow the money, and when I win today, I'm going to pay the money right back. I'm not stealing it. I'm just going to hang on to it because I need it to go gamble. And as soon as I win, I'll put it right back in the bank account, and nobody will be the wiser, yeah?
At times, yes. And then at times, I simply didn't really care since it was partially or mostly my business at the time.
Right. And I'm wondering, I became terrific at hiding it and, unfortunately became a world-class liar when it came to specifically, my gambling. And then that, of course, invades other parts of your life. And I wonder for the people that were closest to you, whether it was a wife or buddies or family, were there moments where people in your life came to you in your mid-20s as it started to get out of control and started saying, hey, bud, you know, what's going on? Or, hey, honey, you don't seem to be yourself, or, you know, you're not really present and you're not focused on things. Were there people that, you know, reached out to you and to have that conversation?
Not really. I pretty much hit it very well, yet my financial dysfunction was more of an issue due to my gambling and my lying, and those were issues I basically dealt with, whether it be business partner, spouse, friends in my life, trying to call me on it. So, I mean, everybody knew. They just really didn't come to me about the gambling specific. It was more of a financial aspect at that time.
All right. They didn't connect the dots. I hear you. And how many years did this go on for?
Well, I've been associated with recovery for drugs and alcohol since I was June 6, 1988. And gambling, again, I picked up in my late teens. And that ran right up until 2022. When I got clean, I hit a bottom, just like I did with my drugs and alcohol, with gambling. And it literally went through three businesses, a marriage, lots of like 401k, went through everything, not to mention I was in a company that I was able to forge a credit card in somebody else's name and do a lot of illegal activity, basically. Six-figure illegal activity, and things got really bad. And then the final straw was basically stealing from my wife, going on a cruise, borrowing from clients on that cruise, and it was just it was a nightmare. I wanted to come home and kill myself.
Sure, you were totally out of control, obviously.
100%. Yeah, there was no hope. I was ready to go to Home Depot, grab a rope. I planned the whole thing out. Yeah. And I, you know, I got busted through my wife, and it was the first time I ever taken anything from her, not to mention all the embezzlement leading up to this. And, it put me in a position financially where I destroyed everything in my life and was about to destroy my second marriage. And, I was ready for help, and I went to an addiction psychiatrist, and, my primary doctor, and had to go through all these hoops to get into an inpatient, one of only six in America, in Arizona, Alchemist. And there I was able to grab on to my original recovery, the 12 steps, a higher power, reconnect with myself, because I hit a bottom desperate enough that I wanted to die. So I was ready to make this work. And God bless, I've done it since.
So. Well, I was at the same facility in Prescott, Arizona. I stayed at Alchemist as well. So we're kind of kindred spirits in that regard. If you don't mind sharing, because I do think it's important for people to understand the level of despair that, you know, goes through our minds and the way we process things emotionally, that it's real and it's quite tangible, the desire to not wake up tomorrow, because that's the answer to our problems. And, you know, the suicide rate amongst gambling addicts is far greater than alcoholics and drug addicts. And it's one of those little kind of dirty little secrets that people don't like to talk about. So I appreciate you opening up what I'm sure is one of the toughest moments of your life. When you came back from that cruise and, you know, financially you're in ruins and you have legal problems, you know, coming your way as well, apparently. What, if you don't mind, walk me through what the thought process was about not waking up the next day and ultimately why you didn't go through with it and who kind of came into your life, if anyone, to get you into a healthier place, at least mentally and emotionally.
Basically, I given the path I've led, both in recovery and the business world and so on, you know, in my second marriage, I have four children, actually five children, I have a stepdaughter as well. Everything came to a head, and it was, the thought process was, I'm worthless. I feel absolutely horrendous. There is no reason to live anymore. And like I said, going to Home Depot and ending it was the cure-all. And I've thought about driving head-on into a truck. I've thought about taking a bridge. I've thought about lots of numerous things just to stop the pain, the emotional turmoil I had inside due to what I've created in my life, and then the disappointment in everybody that I've continuously created, my kids included. And it just, it was enough to, excuse me.
No, I appreciate it.
I get emotional, you know, it's just a
rightfully
thing.
Sure.
And the bottom line with anybody in recovery, you have to get to a point, like they used to say in AA, you know, you need the willingness of the dying. You need to, you know, accept the help, and you have to do the work. And that's the biggest problem here that we have found in with this problem gambling. You know, a lot of people need it. A lot of people don't know how to get it. Most people don't want it. And then it's like I had that inside of me that I was willing to do whatever it took. So by going through Elgamas and getting out, I found a lot of loopholes with the Elgamas program at the time of the people who was running it, and just a lot of things that weren't conducive to recovery as I knew it.
Sure.
And it gave me the vision to actually explore opening a inpatient specific only rehab here in New York State. And that's what I've been working on the first my year since I've been back, and strenuously dealing with people all over the nation, putting a team together. And, you know, just this is what keeps me clean today.
Yeah.
I stopped with the boredom, getting bored. That was one of the triggers for me. And, you know, I do readings. I'm on my knees thanking God. You know, thank you and please help me, you know, and just trying to be more humble and honest, which is key.
Going to take a quick break with a very powerful story on Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Great to have Jason here with us from New York, a gambler in recovery, as I am, and a very emotional and powerful story of how the gambling addiction overtook his life. We're going to get to the good stuff in just 1 second. I promise you that. I just want to go back to that moment where you deciding whether to live or die because of the walls kind of caving in, and you know how you had led your life and all the disappointment and financial ruin and all that. Was there, did you have an epiphany? Did someone come across you at the right time and save you? Did you wake up one day and say, screw it, I'm not going to do this thing to myself? I'm going to be here. I'm going to, quote, unquote, man up and fix things. And I'm trying to figure out how you went from such a low place to deciding that life was worth living and you were going to dedicate yourself to your fixing what ailed you.
It was more of a, as you would call, a spiritual awakening in rehab. I was 3 days into Elgamas, and I had just learned that Las Vegas was like 3 hours away.
Right.
So at that point, I was like, you know, I was done. I was done. I literally dropped to my knees. I asked God to remove the obsession of gambling from me. And also smoking, which was really bizarre. I quit smoking cold turkey in rehab.
There you go.
It was very bizarre, but it was lifted. It was lifted, and I was attuned to what people were saying to me.
Let me ask you this. Were you a spiritual person prior to this or no?
Again, being in Alcoholics Anonymous for over going on 36 years, yes, I have gone through steps. I have had sponsors. I have sponsored people. I have done things, yet the gambling crept up on me and destroyed, was there in my life periodically since my late teens.
Right.
So I never addressed that, and it got worse and worse and worse.
So here we are now. You're a year and a half into your recovery from gambling, and you made the right choice to wake up the next day. That's for damn sure. And walk me through where you are today in relation to how bad things were towards the end of your gambling, where it had taken over your life. Give us a snapshot of where you are today.
I've been working on a business. I created a business here in New York State. I started a group, a therapy group, with one of my team members who was a clinical KSAC-G, who's a clinician for gambling.
Right.
I started a GA meeting. I go to 2 to 3 meetings a week.
Wow.
Mainly via online. There's plenty of meetings online. Very few here where I'm from. There was 2, and I created a 3rd one, which is on Thursday nights. And that's going well. That helps me. I do my readings daily. I'm honest with my wife daily about whatever's going on with me. I see a therapist every 2 weeks, and he helps me as well. And I'm reconnecting with my relationships with my kids and my business, my other business, my career. I've been a hairdresser by trade for over 30 years. I still do that out of my house and still have clients for up to 30 years. So my financial being is starting to get better slowly. I do owe a lot. I made a lot of mistakes. I have a very big hole to climb out of, but I have the strength and the know-all to get this done. And
I'm with you. One of the things you come across, and I'm not a therapist by any stretch of the imagination, but the commonality in how you've living your life, post-gambling, the way I've lived mine now post-gambling, there's a lot of commonality in that from the standpoint of a lot of us, when we're gambling, it's, I want it now, right? Nothing else matters. I'm going to gamble now. I'm going to get money now, et cetera, et cetera. And once you come to terms with the reality that you can't fix everything right now, it's a journey and it takes time. And there's some relationships and some problems you're never going to fix. And you have to be okay with that because that's the reality of the wake of kind of destruction you leave behind you. But I think you're in such a really good place listening to you where, yeah, you owe people money and that sucks for sure. But you also recognize you can't fix it all in one day. And the
right.
fact that you are working and you are earning a living and you can put a little bit away every week and every month and start righting those wrongs from a financial standpoint is great. And then just hearing that you're rebuilding the relationship and the trust, that you probably lost with your kids and family members and loved ones. It just sounds great. And you should know that you should be really proud of that. Like, I'm proud of you listening to it. I've never met you. Because I know what it's like and it's hard and you can't just wake up and all of a sudden fix everything. But if you're good to it and true to it every day for the rest of your life, you will get to a point where you can fix the financial stuff and you can rebuild the majority, if not all, the relationships that you kind of ruined during the scope of your addiction. So you should feel very good about where you're at.
I do. I think the biggest hurdle, and I think it's going to continue, is the relationship I have within me, with myself, the self-loathing, the guilt, shame, remorse, disgust. Everything I've created has triggered me to be poor to myself, and that's going to be huge to continuously work on that.
Yeah.
As days go by, so.
Yeah, but there's something to be said also, and I don't want to minimize the damage because it's real, it's tangible, and it negatively impacted other people's lives, and that's awful, and that's the kind of burden we live with for sure. But the reality is that you have a life worth living also, and as soon as you took stock of who you were and were honest about it and admitted who you were and what you've done, a huge burden got lifted off your shoulders because being honest is half the battle. And once you take ownership of who you are and what you've done, the majority of people will listen to that. And once you've proven it over enough amount of time, they'll start to believe you and the trust comes with that. I wonder in the GA meeting that you run now, where there's probably new people coming in every week that are back at step one where you were 18 months ago, what's the messaging you would give those people? Or if there's someone listening to this show right now who's literally at day one, like, last night they wagered and lost everything, and they're in a bad place, but they recognize I need help, and they don't think they can get it. They don't think they can do it, and the walls are caving in, and life to them may not seem like it's worth living. What message would you give somebody that's at step one?
There's hope. You're not alone. This program and other avenues are designed to help you with this, and you have to really want it. You know, and if you want it, you know, you can lead a horse to water. You can't make him drink it. So sure. You got to put some work into it, and you have to have that gut level honesty. And with that, hope is created. You know, you can have a better way of life.
And what do you do with all the extra? What do you do now with all the extra brain space you got, since you're not worried about, you know, gambling and where you're getting money from to gamble and how you're going to pay and all that stuff that comes with gambling? What do you do now? Have you come up with a hobby or a way to spend that time so that you're not idle as much as you used to be?
Great question. That's actually something I'm working on. It's more of a threefold: physical, mental, emotional. And so my physical, I try to get out and walk daily. I tend to watch shows, and they can get a little addictive, but it helps keep my mind at bay. A lot of this is a mental issue, a mental disease. And so I basically just do things with my wife. We travel a lot. We bought a farm up in Saratoga region. Okay. So we go back and forth to that. And again, working on the business, the rehab I'm trying to create has really helped keep my mind at bay.
Well, I think that's great. And you are right. There are not enough inpatient facilities for gambling addicts. And with the amount of people that are going to suddenly present with a problem, I'm glad that you're working on opening a place up. We need more places where people like us can get help. And I want to let you know, Jason, I really appreciate your time and your willingness to share such an emotional story. I think more people like you that share their stories make it a lot easier for future people to raise their hand and come forward and acknowledge that they have a problem. So please keep doing it. I'm really, really proud of you. And I can't thank you enough for coming on. Thank you so much.
Craig, thank you very much for having me.
All right, be well. Have a blessed weekend.
You too. God bless.
Take care. Well, that was amazing. That's Jason from New York sharing his story. And that's why we do this show. Because while there's a lot of commonality in what gambling addicts go through and the pain they cause, not just for themselves, but other people, you know, the stories of recovery are real and they're raw and they're emotional. And to hear a man that was willing to take his own life, come through that and now help other people and dedicate his life to helping other people is just so amazing and why we do this show. And I hope that when you hear shows like this and take stock of the fact that as just a regular guy, a hairdresser, who fell prey to an addiction that he never wanted to fall prey to, that you have some level of empathy for what addicts go through. And that's why we'll continue to do this show. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and thank you for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.